Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In today's episode, I want to talk about South Korea. Now, if you've been following the channel, you'll know that I recently posted a video on South Korea, whereby I was talking about the disastrous 2022 performance. The country posted a deficit of $48 billion, which was the largest in its history. And it's now going into a potential deep recession for the first part of 2023. But I don't want to give you an update on what's happening from the economic perspective. What I want to talk about today is a really unusual rental system that exists in Korea called Cheonse. Now, normally when you're looking at real estate, there are two options. Either you buy or you rent. But in South Korea, there are three options. And Cheonse has proved to be very popular since it was introduced into the country in the 1960s. So in today's video, I'll have a quick recap on South Korea itself. We'll have a look at what Cheonse is and why it's so popular with landlords and renters and why it's been driving the housing market over the course of the last 20 years. We'll then talk about the recent changes in legislation that have been brought in by the government that were designed to try to protect people who were renting through Cheonse but have actually backfired and had a negative effect on the whole market. We'll have a look at what's going on with regards to interest rates, which have a very close relationship to the success of Cheonse. We'll look at what's happening to house prices. We'll then have a look at the population pyramid because South Korea has the lowest birth rate in the world and has a rapidly declining population. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary. So what I think the implications of what's going on in the property market in South Korea right now are for the South Korean economy and what this means for the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I want to push to try to get to 250,000 subscribers. So if you could help, that'd be fantastic. Don't forget, I always include chapters. So if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you would like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And as always, thank you so much to everyone that has supported the channel. Really, really appreciate it. South Korea occupies the southern part of the Korean Peninsula and has one land border with North Korea. Now, in terms of the history of how North and South Korea were created, up until the end of World War II, the country was actually just one country called Korea. However, because of long-standing divisions within the country, at the end of World War II, it was decided that the Soviet Union should install a government in the north of the country and the USA would work with a government in the south. And at that time, it was intended that both countries would ultimately merge to create an enlarged Korea. However, between 1945 and 1950, the Cold War got in the way and the Soviet Union established a communist government in North Korea. And in 1950, North Korea invaded South Korea with the intention of overtaking the country. This led to the outbreak of the Korean War, which lasted for 3 years and resulted in more than 2.5 million deaths. And a demilitarized zone was established across what's known as the 38th parallel, which runs across the 38 degree north latitude line. And this divided situation has remained in place for the last 70 years. South Korea does not have an abundance of natural resources, and less than 25% of all of its land is cultivated. As a result of this, it's a net importer of energy and food products. Education is highly valued in South Korea, and over the last 60 years, it's developed its economy to focus on high-tech engineering and electronics. Real estate is a really important part of both the South Korean economy and also the net worth of South Korean citizens. In 2021, the total value of all real estate transactions was more than $2 trillion, which represented around 125% of the country's GDP. And in terms of the net worth of the citizens, it's estimated that around 80% of individuals' net worth are held in real estate. Now, that's one of the highest percentages in the world. If you compare that to the USA or the UK, it's around 25 to 40%. So people in South Korea are placing virtually all of their life savings into real estate. And when you have these sort of statistics, the success of the real estate market is intrinsically linked to the success of the economy and the individuals within it. And fortunately for South Korea, over the course of the last 20 years, the real estate market has proved to be extremely resilient. This chart shows the house price index in South Korea dating back to 1998. And the scale on the right-hand side is an index, it's not in percentages. And when you look at an index, it's always benchmarked against a starting point. But what you can see here is a clear and consistent trend for an increase in prices over the last 25 years. And this is really quite surprising because virtually every housing market in the world was impacted by the global financial crisis in 2008. This chart shows the house price index for the USA over the last 25 years. And you can see that between 2008 and 2011, there was a sharp drop in prices. And this chart is representative of most housing markets around the world. If we jump back to the South Korean chart, you can see that there is no pronounced fall in 2008. Prices stayed relatively high and have continued to rise year on year. And this is extremely unusual. And there are a couple of reasons to explain this. Firstly, the amount of mortgage debt is much lower in South Korea than it is in most other economies. So therefore, the global financial crisis had less of an impact because the individuals owning property did not have high leverage and therefore were not forced to sell their properties into the market. But the second factor is because South Korea operate this unusual system called Cheonsei. South Korea has a population of around 52 million people, and that equates to around 20 million households. And of those 20 million, 11 are owned and 9 million are occupied by people who do not own that property. Now, in most markets around the world, the 9 million households that are not owned would be renting. However, in South Korea, there is a third option called Cheonsei. Now, Cheonsei has existed in South Korea for more than 100 years, but it was formally introduced into the economy in 1959 through a civil act, and its popularity spread in the 1960s. And it's estimated that today, around 40% of all of the non-owned properties are occupied by people under Cheonsei contracts. Now, the way that these contracts work is very unusual. The landlord for the property will set the price for the Cheonsei contract between 50% and 70% of the value of the property. So let's work through a very simple example where an apartment is valued at $100,000. Now, the owner of that apartment will set the value of the Cheonsei contract at up to 70% of that value. So in this case, $70,000. So if you want to live in that apartment, you need to find $70,000 in cash. You then hand it over to the owner of that apartment in exchange for a contract that allows you to live in the property rent-free for 2 years. And at the end of that two-year period, the owner of the property gives you back the full amount of the $70,000 that you gave them at the start of the contract. So when you look at the overall perspective here, you're getting to live in that property rent-free. You're effectively putting down a $70,000 deposit, which is returned to you in full at the end of the contract. So this looks like a fantastic arrangement for the people who want to live in the property. But why would the landlord agree to do that? Well, firstly, the owner of that property is being given $70,000 in cash for 2 years, so they can place that money on deposit in a bank and earn interest from it, or they could put it into the stock market or do whatever they like with it. But basically, they could get a return on that $70,000. But in addition to that return, they're also making a return in terms of the property market. And as we saw from the chart we looked at earlier, the property market has been rising year on year for the last 25 years. So this has been a no-lose gamble from the property owner's perspective. You basically got somebody looking after your house, living in it, whilst it's appreciating in value. And you've also got $70,000 in this example to go and make some money from. So it's a win-win situation from the landlord's perspective, as long as the property market keeps going up. Now, this chart shows the movements in interest rates in South Korea over the last 25 years. So you can see that 20 years ago, interest rates in the country were around 5%, which would have represented a nice healthy return on that deposit that you're being given under a Cheonsei contract from a landlord's point of view. However, over the last 20 years, there's been a marked reduction in interest rates. And between 2015 and 2021, interest rates actually dropped below 2%. So the returns from holding a deposit in the bank account have fallen significantly over this period. Now, as you can see, over the last 12 months, alongside the rest of the world, interest rates have started to increase rapidly in South Korea. And this is in response to what's been happening to inflation. And this chart shows the movement in the rate of inflation in South Korea over the last 25 years. And as you can see, at the end of the 1990s, inflation was actually running at around 7%. However, there was then a sharp fall. And between the early 2000s and 2020, there was a general reduction in inflation. However, over the course of the last 18 months, we've seen inflation starting to take off. Firstly, as a result of the increases in demand that we're seeing globally as we came out of the global pandemic. And then secondly, following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which drove up commodity prices all across the world. And the current rate of inflation in South Korea is now running at just below 5%. So what this chart shows us is that inflation in South Korea is now above the rate of interest that's being paid on deposits. So if you're a landlord, you can no longer rely upon the interest that's being paid on the deposit on your tenancy to be able to live off, because prices are rising faster than the rates of interest, and therefore you're losing money on a real basis. So that means that tenancy landlords are now fully dependent on what's happening to property prices to make their returns. This is the graph that we looked at earlier, which plots house prices in South Korea over the last 25 years. And as we discussed earlier, over that period, there's been a steady increase in prices. However, if you look at what's happened over recent months, you can see that there's been a downturn. And if we change the scale of the graph to look at a month-by-month analysis, you can see that there has been a fall in house prices in every one of the last 6 months, and that fall is accelerating. And this obviously represents really bad news if you're a tenancy landlord, because you're fully dependent on the price rises to make your returns on that contract. So when prices are falling, that means that you're now making losses on that deal. So as we discussed earlier, tenancy contracts represent around 40% of all of the properties that are being rented in South Korea. And up until now, this has been a fantastic investment opportunity for anybody that wanted to become involved in it. This graph compares house prices and tenancy prices dating back to 2012. The scale on the left-hand side is shown in millions of Korean won. The purple line is the median house price, and the green line is the median tenancy price. And as you can see, the two lines are moving almost entirely in parallel. Up until the end of 2021, both the median house price and tenancy prices increased steadily. However, over the course of the last 12 months, there has been a change in the shape of this graph. And this was partly as a result of new legislation that was brought in by the Korean authorities. And this legislation stated that anybody that was renting under a tenancy contract had an automatic right of renewal at the end of that contract. They could extend for a further 1 or 2 years, and the maximum that a landlord was allowed to increase the price by was 5%. So essentially, this was capping the amount that tenancy landlords could make upon renewal of the contract. Now, historically, tenancy landlords have been able to renew based upon the value of the property. So as the value went up, so did the return on their tenancy contract. But the authorities wanted to put a stop to this. And the reason was that they were trying to protect the people who were renting under the tenancy contracts. However, it did backfire because firstly, it impacted on house prices generally, because the no-lose gamble suddenly became less attractive, because you couldn't just keep increasing your prices by 10 or 15% every time the contract came up for renewal. You now had a cap on it. And this meant that house prices in the market started to come down. And also what we saw was a lot of tenancy landlords decided that they would rather live in the property themselves. And this actually resulted in a reduction in the amount of property that was available under the tenancy contracts. So as you can see from these two graphs, tenancy contracts are now far less attractive from a property owner's perspective. Firstly, property prices have fallen to the level that they were at around 3 years ago. And that's obviously really bad news when you combine it with the fact that interest rates are now below the rate of inflation. So landlords are also losing out in terms of holding those deposits in bank accounts. So all of this sounds like bad news for the landlords, but there's also bad news for the people who are renting under tenancy contracts. Firstly, landlords who have not been affected by the automatic renewal legislation are withdrawing their property from the market. And secondly, it's now being reported that a lot of landlords don't have the capital to actually give back to the people who are renting their property. In the past, a lot of these landlords were happy to renew the contract at an increased price, and therefore no money was moving back to the renting parties. However, now that people are exiting the properties and the deals, it's now coming to light that some of the landlords don't have the money to be able to return it, and therefore we're having people who are losing large amounts of cash. And this could potentially have a really negative impact on house prices, because we could start seeing an unwinding of the tenancy market, and that could really drive property prices down. Now, this chart shows the current population pyramid for South Korea. And if you follow the channel, you'll know that we've looked at this for a number of different countries. And this chart shows us the number of different people in each age bracket split between male and female. Male in the blue section on the left and female in the red section on the right. And the categories are 0 to 4, 5 to 9, 10 to 14, 15 to 19, all the way up to 100. And you can start to see the problems that South Korea are facing from the shape of this pyramid. Because they've had a reducing birth rate over the course of the last 30 years, you can see that the number of young people is less than the number of older people. And that's going to cause them a number of problems. Firstly, they've got a declining number of people entering the workforce each year. Secondly, they've got an aging population, so people are getting older, and that's going to put a burden onto the state because they're going to need to support all of those people as they go into old age. And thirdly, they've got a declining population. If we move this chart on by 5 years, you can see that in 2028, it's getting worse. By 2033, there is a very thin base to this pyramid. In 2038, it's even worse. And if I keep clicking on, you can see that this pyramid is no longer anywhere like a pyramid. It's becoming a straight line. And by 2100, you can see there are major problems in Korea. Now, if we jump up to this total population chart, you can see that the total population is currently around 52 million. But over the course of the next 70 years, there is a serious decline in population. If we click this through, you can see that every 5 years, there is a fall in population. And that's going to cause major problems because the less people you've got, that means the less taxes that you're taking, the less GDP that you're generating. And that's going to mean that the state will struggle to be able to support all of those older people. Because in an ideal world, you have an expanding workforce to create more tax revenue, which means that you can then pay for more infrastructure and support the elderly. So with the declining population, it's going to be a major challenge for South Korea. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video as a follow-up to the recent video I did talking about the economy in South Korea. And the economic situation is quite dire. In 2022, the country posted a trade deficit of $48 billion, which is the largest in its history, and the outlook for the next 6 months is bleak. Because South Korea is at the forefront of technology and is producing a lot of high-tech equipment, as the global economy has slowed down, there's been a reduction in demand for those sorts of products, and South Korea is at the sharp end of that. And unfortunately, South Korea, alongside most other countries in the world, has seen an increase in inflation, which has led to an increase in interest rates, which is putting pressure on anybody that's got debt. So the outlook for 2023 was already fairly bleak. However, when you throw on top what's happening in the property market, the situation could actually get much, much worse. As I mentioned at the start of the video, real estate is really important to the success of the South Korean economy. The value of the transactions in the market is actually larger than South Korea's total GDP. And the individuals who live in South Korea have up to 80% of their net worth invested into property. So when we see a slowdown or a fall in property prices, that's going to have an impact both on the economy and also on the confidence of all of the people in South Korea. Property prices have fallen month on month in every one of the last 6 months. So that means that individuals' net worth are starting to fall. But also people are now losing confidence in the property market. Because historically, you could buy a property and rent it out under a fiancé contract. And you knew that you were going to make money both from that deposit by leaving it in the bank. And also because the price of that property was going to rise over the long term. When you look at the situation today, you can't tick the box on either of those two items. Leaving the money in the bank is actually going to lose you value because inflation is running at a higher rate than interest rates and property prices are now falling. So this means that if you're a landlord sitting with a fiancé contract, it's become less attractive. And also the authorities have brought in a cap in terms of how much you can increase the price of that contract upon renewal. So when you look at all these different factors, it's pushing people towards selling that property. And the last thing that you want in a falling market is to have a lot of people who want to sell their property, because all that does is force prices down. We've talked about demand and supply a lot on the channel. And as you should hopefully know by now, when there's a large increase in supply and you don't have a commensurate increase in demand, that forces prices down because you've got a surplus. You've got more supply than demand, so therefore people will pay less because they've got more choice. And that is likely to happen in South Korea over the course of the next 6 to 12 to 18 months. And if that does happen, and if the property market continues falling, then that's going to drive the economy down further because it's intrinsically linked to what's happening in the property market. Now, the other really concerning factor with regards to South Korea is what's going on with regards to the population. We saw from the population pyramid that firstly, the population is declining, but secondly, it's getting older. So there are less people entering the workforce, therefore there will be less taxes, there'll be less GDP. So the economy is likely to keep contracting, but also from a property perspective, there are less new buyers entering the market. So at some point, we will have more sellers than buyers, and that again will bring property prices down further and is going to be further bad news for the South Korean economy. Now, in terms of what the impact of all of this will be on the global economy, as I've said a million times before, the whole world is interconnected. So what's happening in South Korea will have a knock-on impact to other countries because South Korea is a net importer. Therefore, it's buying in lots of things from lots of other countries. If its economy is contracting and it's going into recession, it means it will buy less. Therefore, all of the countries that are selling to South Korea will sell less. They will make less revenue. Their GDP will also be going down. So it does have a knock-on ripple impact, and therefore, bad news for the South Korean economy equates to bad news for the global economy. So I wanted to post this video firstly to give you an update on what's happening in South Korea, but secondly to talk you through the Cheonse market, because I think it's really interesting. I haven't seen it before. I think it's unique to South Korea. People may correct me in the comments and say that it happens in other countries around the world, but I'm not aware of any other real estate markets that have characteristics like this. And it's worked really well over the course of the last 50 years or so. However, it looks like the market may have turned against the Cheonse market, and this could represent really bad news for both the real estate market and the South Korean economy. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's video, you found it interesting and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, then please give me a thumbs up, and thank you so much for watching this video all the way through to the end.